I want to tell you, this is the first time I've ever listened to your show. It was just totally by accident. So pleased to hear the latter part of the show. The earlier part of the show, I guess, worried me.
Aloha loves the family. Aloha loves the saved. Aloha loves the unborn babies and the NRA. And Aloha hates the liberals, the faggots and their friends. We're soldiers of Christ and we're here to defend the way it used to be, the way it ought to be, the way it's gonna be again.
Well, you know what? This is one of the times where it's just killing me to have to sort of read a bit of an intro in the middle of this song, because you and I are looking at each other loving this stuff. Jill Sobule belongs to a rare breed of artists. Her work is at once deeply personal and socially conscious, seriously funny and derisively tragic. Wow. It's like a personality disorder. Over five albums and a decade of recording, the Denver-born singer, songwriter, guitarist has tackled such topics as the death penalty, anorexia, shoplifting. Wasn't that Naomi? Never mind. Reproduction, the French resistance movements? Adolescence, and the Christian right, which, as Tim the Tool always says, the Christian right is...
neither.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time on the Drew Marshall Show, Jill. By the way, Jill, your last name, Sobule, am I getting that right?
Yes, as far as anyone.
You're crackling up. You still must be going through security. Do they have the magic wand on you right now?
Yes, I just got through security.
Oh, all good. Right. Are you allergic to latex? How did it go?
No. It was good.
Okay.
They always check me because I have lots of strange chords and guitar things, and they don't know what a capo is.
I know.
Strange.
When I travel, I always have a blues harp with me, and to see a harmonica in someone's briefcase just freaks them out. They have no idea what to do with that. So, listen, Jill, I got an email just yesterday from Fabio, and he said that he saw you at the gym and wondered if you could spot for him.
You know, yesterday I was at the gym, and my friend dared me to go up to him to ask him to spot him. You know, I'm a 90-pound weakling, mind you. But the funny part about it was I tweeted that, and then he came up to me because he did a video with me back in the 90s. He played the foil in the I Kissed a Girl video.
Right.
And after I tweeted that, he's like, oh, it's good to see you. And I go, yeah, I come here every so often. I'm trying to get in shape. He goes, well, if you're here when I'm here, I'll show you some things.
Wow.
So after I tweeted that, you know, my workout buddy is going to be Fabio now.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, the best Fabio thing I've ever seen was a picture of him having just gotten off a roller coaster and a bird hit him in the face and broke his nose.
I know. I kind of felt bad for him because, you know what? He's kind of actually a really nice guy.
Aw, don't tell me that.
Yeah, I know. It's disappointing. He's actually kind of really sweet because he's such an easy target.
Yeah. Oh, well, anyway, listen, moving on to more important things, Jill. How's the new turntable?
Oh, yeah. I'm just, you know, a turntable and a tube amplifier, and I'm completely analog and old school.
Nice.
And I don't know if it's just the nostalgic, but I really do believe that it sounds better than those ones and O's going through your brain.
Yeah, and what did you end up buying at Amoeba Records?
Well, I bought some strange old, I bought a Bobby Gentry Glenn Campbell record.
Wow.
I went some really old, and then I'm trying to get ones that my mother threw away, get them back. So I had some, I was really into, when I was really little, I was really into James Brown.
Nice. You know, I interviewed James Brown just a few months prior to his death, which probably would have turned out better than a few months after. And what a neat guy. It was just such a great... His manager told us that he gave us the longest interview he's given anybody. I think he was just finally starting to mellow a little bit. He wasn't as wound up as he used to be. What a neat guy. Anyway, did you ever get a chance to meet Mr. James Brown?
No, but I saw him. But I saw him. I wish I would have seen him in the day. I saw him towards the end. But my favorite part was his opening song before he comes on was the Entertainment Tonight theme song. it was so schlocky, but you didn't care because he did it. It was so great. It was James Brown.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, can you tell us the story about getting a voicemail from Ted Kennedy?
Oh, my gosh. When he was running again, and I thought it was someone was joking with me, you know, doing the Ted Kennedy voice, and it was like, you know, Joe, I can't even do it, so I'm not going to do it. So, you know, I'd like you to come play my event in Boston, you know, the fundraiser, and, I kept playing for my friends saying, you know, this person is really, imitates him really good. So then I had to get an email saying, no, that was really Ted Kennedy.
Wow.
So I would have blown it off, really.
It sounds like, now correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you are a bleeding heart liberal. Is that true? Are you a bleeding heart liberal, Jill? That's the phrase that us Canadians have learned.
I'm a lefty. What can I say? But, you know, but it's so strange how it's changed. You know, being even on the left in the United States is probably in Europe or in Canada being in the center.
Yeah.
The right has gotten so nutty.
Yeah. Well, we've just blessed our listeners with two of your songs, regaled them with two of your songs today. What was the first one called, Tim? Do you remember the first one?
We want our American back. What does
that mean? We played that on our show today, and it turned me into a fan instantly. And then, of course, we just finished playing
Soldiers of Christ.
Soldiers of Christ, yeah.
I think it's the first time it's actually been played on the radio. They don't like that in my part of the world. And the America Back is still so relevant right now because, you know, especially with immigrant issues it's really going back to Benjamin Franklin when he was complaining about all those horrible Germans and their beer halls, you know.
Yeah.
We're a nation of immigrants.
Well, I got a few questions for you about your life growing up. So let's do a little trip down memory lane here. How many siblings do you have? I know you have an older brother. He's like 7 years older. Is that right?
He's 6 years. He'd be upset if I said seven.
Okay, 6 years older. Is that it, Jill?
That's it.
And is he still in a rock band?
No. In fact, he's the one Republican in the family.
Oh, my goodness.
We don't understand it, though. But, yeah. But he's a lawyer. Like some people. He works for a coal company.
I'm sorry, a poll? P-O-L-E company?
No, coal.
Oh, coal.
And clean coal.
Right. Okay. I thought he did litigation for strippers. That would be strange. What did all your studying, for international affairs, how did that really help you out at this point in life? Because you remember when you're sitting there in school and you look at the teacher and you say, how am I ever going to use this? Did the international affairs education really help you out there, Jill?
Well, here's the deal. I either wanted to be a rock star or an international spy.
Okay. Some would say.
By the time I went to college, I realized that Emma Peel really never existed.
Right.
Wow. No, but you know what? I think it was really it's really good as a songwriter to have your liberal arts because you need to be well rounded, I believe, as a songwriter.
Well. A spy and a rock star. I think we're talking about Mick Jagger, are we not?
Yes. Or I love that Julia Child was a cook and a spy in World War II.
That's right.
I love that.
When was the last time you popped open the guitar case on the sidewalk and did a little busking like back in the day?
Gosh. Well, you know, I got my start from busking, actually.
Oh, good segue.
Good segue, yeah. I went, actually, my third year in the International Affairs program, I went abroad, and I went to Spain. And at that point, I was just a guitar player. I never sang, and I had wrote songs, but I never played them in public. I was too shy. So a friend and I who played flute, you know, guitar-flute duo, that's a real exciting thing. We decided to busk on the streets in Sevilla. And as we were playing, our third song, a guy came by and said he had a nightclub and would we like to play his club. And first we're like, yeah, two young American students. And then that, I dropped out of school 6 months later and was still playing that nightclub.
Wow.
And I wondered if that guy hadn't walked by.
Yeah.
I must have been an international spy.
There you go. There you go. I'm just thinking, you know, it's a very similar story to Justin Bieber there. Was that Scooter Braun that had the club that he walked by and gave the break?
So similar.
So listen, you know, you're on this show today because I phoned a gentleman who has been quite nice to me in trying to further my career, Mr. Ken Hertz, and I said, Kenny, I need a Jew. And and Ken said, well, I'll ask my buddy Tom. So Tom says, it'll be a little hard to get Adam Sandler, but I think we could get Jill. So you bumped Adam Sandler, Jill. How does that make you feel?
Well, you know, I do have his was a lot more famous, but I do have my Christmas hit, Jesus Was a Dreidel Spinner.
Yes.
which is a Harry Shearer staple. Whenever he does these Christmas songs, and that's his, I've done his show with him. He always plays at the cantor doing fake Hebrew because he doesn't really know. But yes, that's my surprise. You don't have it. You'll have to look it up.
Oh, we'll find it.
Oh, yeah.
So listen, tomorrow is Hanukkah, and we all know the Hanukkah song by Sandler, but we're not going to play that because he's not on our show today, so we don't care about him. But I want to know, from a Jewish point of view, do you really give a holy grunt about Hanukkah, about tomorrow? Are you gonna do anything different tomorrow, or does life just go on?
Let me tell you about my history with Hanukkah, which is, my first time ever on the stage in front of an audience was in fourth grade at our school play, and I played Miss Hanukkah. Mary's son played Miss Christmas, and it was to explain the holiday. Mary's son explained the birth of the Lord Jesus Christ, and I had the role of explaining that oil burned longer than we thought it would. It was like such a friggin' drag. So ever since then, it's like, you know, it's not... When I was a kid, we, you know, put out the menorah, but we kind of got our presents on Christmas. You know, it's never been, it's a drag of a holiday.
Right. What is,
and the race game, what kind of BS is that?
to Jill Sobule, what is the coolest Jewish holiday? What's the one that you get excited about, you get tingly about?
Passover.
Yeah.
Even though you read the story and, you know, you're celebrating, you know, the death of thousands of Egyptians. it's like, that's kind of gruesome. But it's the food and the wine, and I'm not a drinker. I've never been one. And I think maybe I can count on my one hand the times that I might have had a hangover.
Well, that's
Passover.
Right. That's a record, I think, right there. But growing up, was there sort of not a confluence of a couple of different faith systems that converged upon your skull?
Well, we grew up, you know, I lived in kind of in Denver, third generation Jews, like pioneer Jews or something, but we didn't grow up really religious. But, you know, we were always, you know, you always knew you were Jewish and felt Jewish, and we celebrated the holidays. But then I was the only Jew at a Catholic girls' school.
Wow.
That was a trip.
So, well, that's what I'm talking about. Does that, did not, I mean, with your personality and that background, were you just labeled an autodidactic iconoclast at that school?
Hey, you know what? They kind of liked me. I was exotic. I'd never been exotic before. Like I was from Tahiti or something. So I liked that. I liked that sense of being different. And I was sent to have to go to religious classes, even though I liked taking them. You know, I actually know my New Testament. But I didn't have to do them. So the only drag was on Ash Wednesday, all of the, most of my friends, you know, because you could get off that day, but they would know if you had the X on your forehead, you know, you had the cross, that not the X, that's Charlie Manson.
Yeah.
you had the, and so all my friends would put cigarette ashes because they miss, you know, they wouldn't go to services. So, but I couldn't do that because, you know, it didn't matter.
No. And it would burn, too, right?
So, it would burn, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, I don't even know how to ask this question, Jill, without sounding like a complete schmuck here, but, you know, are you a real Jew? Because the cultural Judaism, you know, I'm still trying to figure out, it's kind of like going to the Bible Belt area and where everybody's a Christian, and yet when you start to talk to them about their Christianity, you realize they're a bunch of ignorant people that are Christians simply because they live in a geographical location. And it's just too much to move that trailer across town. So for you, you know, are you a, like, what's a real Jew? Is there, you know, what's the difference between a nominal Jew, a Orthodox Jew? I mean, I know you don't have the curly things and that you're not wearing the garbs and stuff, but, like, what kind of a Jew are you?
That's a really good question. I think you just feel it. I meant you feel like when you were a little kid, did you like, did you like the comedy of Bob Hope or Woody Allen? You know, did you, I'll tell you when I feel like a Jew is I remember, in fact, I'm going to Nashville right now, but I lived there for a couple of years. And I would always get people saying, well, first of all, I'm blonde and I have blue eyes, so I know there was some Cossack raping going on in my background, you know, there had to be. But when I get someone saying to me, you know, you don't seem like a Jew, all of a sudden I become super Jew, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, super Jew.
Exactly.
Okay, so along the way, I mean, you know, you're only a year older than I am, which means you're very, very young.
Yes, thank you.
And along the way, my faith landscape has certainly changed. I look back on some of the fundamentalist funnies that were presiding in my thought process at the time, and I shudder. As a matter of fact, that my son brings up, he likes to bring it up a lot. He's now 23, and he says to me, hey, Dad, remember when you wouldn't let me read Harry Potter? It's like, oh, wow. So I've changed and morphed and lightened up and hunkered down into more important areas, and I've been able to kind of, you know, shake off some of the dust of the tribal nuances that have driven me crazy over the decades. How would you say your spiritual journey, at the risk of sounding a little Jerry Springer, how has that changed? How has it morphed?
That's funny, because I remember, you know, there was Hebrew school, and it was kind of, you know, kids are supposed to do it, even though my parents were not religious, it was more like a social thing you did, but I remember it was like, you know, do I go to school for 5 days? Do I want to have my Saturday or Sunday filled with another school? Like, hell no. So I was just so not, you know, I would say, I'm not going to Jew school, and my mom would say, it's Hebrew school, do not say that. I'm not going to Jew school. So there was like a rebellion. And as I get older, not necessarily, but maybe it's like the now as I get older, I'm like, oh, my back, you know, maybe I'm turning into an old Jew. You know, my grandfather had an accent, you know, the you know, getting immigrant, like, you know, you know, old Jewish accent. Yeah. I thought when I was little. But as you get, as people get older, you just start talking like that. You start talking like an old Jew, and maybe that's true.
That's scary. Well, okay, so.
So that's what I mean, and also I think as you get older, sometimes you think of your mortality and you can, you can pick things from your faith or other faith that seem to give you comfort, or not necessarily dogmas, but, the golden rule.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. On the phone, and just about say goodbye to Jill Sobule, who is probably one of the most unique singer-songwriters. And when you say that, it's kind of like, remember when you're back in the dating days, Tim, and someone would try to set you up with someone, and they say, is she pretty? Oh, but she's got a nice personality, yeah.
She can play the guitar.
Yeah, it's worrisome compliment here. But I'm just so intrigued, and I am more drawn to lyrics than I am to melody and musical talent, and to peruse your tunes has just given me great sadistic pleasure over the last last week or so, because you I would imagine that you have a lot of people, especially those that are connected with you business wise, who are frustrated at the fact that you're not a sellout. I hate to use that term, but you are such an iconoclast that you're never going to be in that top 10 pop chart fame, right?
I know. And you know what? You just have to say, okay, it's time for me to get more popular and have hits. Sometimes that's not always, you don't always put out your best stuff. So I think I'm just doomed to do what I do.
All right. If you had, and by the way, I think I've gotten rid of most of these listeners, but on this station there is a lot of evangelical Christians that listen to the station, and some of them are pretty wound up hardcore fundamentalists, but those folks don't listen to my show anymore. But let's say they accidentally stumble upon this as they're flicking channels. What would you say to the fundamentalists, Jesus people, the happy clappies?
Well, I think, on one hand, I'm jealous of people that have a really, really strong faith and believe they're going to go to heaven. I'd love to see a vision. I've never seen a ghost or a vision, and more power to you.
That's just because you don't drink.
And I don't drink, exactly. It's not too late for that either. But I say more power to you that you have your faith, but you it's like now where the Supreme Court now we're finding out is going to hear a case in probably March of the Prop 8 and same sex marriage, but don't, there is a separation of government and church and more power to you, but I don't have to live like you.
Yeah.
I don't have to live like that. So that's what I would say.
Do you and Neil Diamond share like Jew jokes when you get together and stuff? Do you do that?
I only really met him twice. I was, how you have loves. Yeah, Neil was one of mine. And 3 days ago, I was playing up by San Francisco in Marin County, and after the show, he comes up and I'm jamming with Bob Weir.
Wow.
I'm secret deadhead. That's who. People don't know that. So, what's so great is meeting your heroes. That's the best. And especially if they're nice.
Listen, Jill, we've got to get you back on the show again if you wouldn't mind in the future.
I want to come and play. That would be fun.
Yeah, we need to get you up here to Toronto.
Email and let me know where you guys think a good place for me to play.
Oh, I already know it. It's called Hugh's Room, and I'll talk to the guy that owns it. I'll talk to Richard next week about getting you up here, okay?
Come on.
Done. What else do you need?
Thank you, Drew.
Do you need a little help getting through security? I can help you with that, too.
Great. I got this Canadian here.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the Drew Marshall Show, Jill Sobule, we're going to go out with the song she mentioned just a little while ago. Oh, I'm sorry, Tim, what's the name of this song one more time?
Jesus Was a Dreidel Spinner.
There you go. Jill, great to chat with you, and happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah and Christmas to y'all.
Thanks, Jill. Bye. Jill's off to Nashville, so we're going to play her song as we go out, folks. A short break on the show. That was our token Jew right there. Maybe we should do a monthly spot with Jill Sobule and just call her the token Jew.
Well, we have the Hollywood correspondent.
We got the Hollywood correspondent. We could have a Jewish correspondent. I think it'd be good.
Well, let's mix it up with Howard, too. Okay. We could have a whole middle
female
thing. Yeah, that's
right. Oh, yeah, happy Hanukkah to humble Howard.
Yes.
Miracles, but he never ate pork rinds. Christmas is for everyone. Hanukkah is too. All you remember, your Lord was a Jew.
Hey,
years ago, after 5 years of pastoring in Australia, Drew Marshall moved back to Canada and, with absolutely zero broadcasting experience, walked into the studios of Joy 1250 and pitched the idea of hosting a talk show that was different. Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show is now listened to by over 100,000 people around southern Ontario and thousands more by Canadians coast to coast. On September 15, 2012, the Drew Marshall Show will start season 10. And as a thank you for putting up with Drew for 10 years, we've decided to cut all advertising costs by 10%. Doesn't matter which plan you're interested in. 1250 specials, 10% off. One-day advertising package, 10% off. Our summer holiday special, 10% off. Or even our 15-week advertising package is now 10% off. To sign up for one of our 10-year anniversary advertising specials, contact us today at drewmarshall.ca.